Good evening. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Jamie Holt. I am the Chief Communications Officer with the Valley Air District, and we are in between facilitators right now. So Jimmy Yee, we are reaching out to him to try and get him back on board. It was the end of the district's fiscal year on June 30th, so we have to enter into a new agreement. We are hoping that Jimmy will come back and help us out. If not, we have a couple of other potential folks. But in the meantime, unfortunately, you are stuck with me tonight. So I'm going to try and go slow enough so that the translation can occur. And I will encourage all of our speakers to do that. And then we will be working to bring back Jimmy or get a new facilitator moving forward. So what's going on tonight is we have a couple of presentations and we hope to have a bit of back and forth with the committee. The development of the community emission reduction programs really is a joint effort. First and foremost, it's about the community and your ideas and suggestions and input. Secondly, it's the Air District kind of facilitating the process and looking where we can put into place strategies and programs to reach our goals. But then we also have some partners in that process and partners that you've actually worked with already. We have the California Air Resources Board. They're going to give a presentation tonight on some of the things that we are working with them on to incorporate into the SERP. There are different things that they are responsible for when it comes to dealing with air pollution, and they're working with us to put some ideas in place for the SERP. The Department of Pesticide Regulation, that's another partner that has been here at these meetings, and they too will be working with us to put some ideas into the SERP, some strategies, some potential action that can be taken. The city of Shafter will be speaking tonight, talking about the things that the city specifically is doing. So with each of those presentations, we hope to have additional questions and ideas from you all. I want to thank those of you who got back to us either at the end of the last meeting or in the two-week interim between meetings with the comments from last time. We are putting responses to those together. We hope to have them out today. That didn't happen. Hopefully tomorrow or Wednesday we'll have those responses to you about some of the comments that were made last week, 2 weeks ago. I also want to say that we now have a section on the website that is devoted to the documents that the steering committee has submitted to the district to share. And I apologize that that was not put up earlier. There was a couple things that happened on our end, and it just didn't get done. So it has been done. It is up now. And you can go to the Shafter page, and you can see docs submitted by steering committee, and you can see the documents that have come in so far. And if there is a response from the district, you can see that response. In addition to that, good news, we have a second monitor up and running in Shafter. It's at Grimway School, and you can also see that information, and I just checked, air quality is pretty good right now for Shafter, although I will tell you, the 4th of July, lots of fireworks were going off in Shafter. And of course, we saw quite a spike on the evening of July 4th, as we did with most cities throughout the valley. So you probably felt it. Sorry about that. But you can see those numbers by going to the AB617 website, the Shafter page, and then where it says air monitoring. There's now two sites in Shafter where you can get information. Tonight, we're really hoping to get some feedback from the committee, specifically on those elements of the SERP that our partners are going to be bringing in. So they're each going to talk a little bit about kind of what they're responsible for and how that may lend itself to the SERP. We'll have time after each presenter for questions. We did put down, or will be putting down, Jessica, if it hasn't happened already, comment cards. And again, we want you, if you have any ideas, suggestions, questions, please put them on the comment cards that Jessica will be passing out. We will respond to those. Members of the public, feel free to fill them out as well. Just make sure that at the end of the day, either leave them on the table, or if you're in the back, make sure they make it to either Jessica, Christina, or myself. Christina will actually be taking notes for us tonight, and we'll put those up as we get them. Just a quick reminder, if you hadn't noticed, we put summary meeting minutes up for each meeting on the Shafter community page. So after each meeting, it usually takes us about a week or two to get them up, but you can kind of see what happened in meetings past. You can hear the audio from meetings past. You can watch the Facebook Live video, because I know you all are, have nothing but free time and are just want to spend as much time on this as possible. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the California Air Resources Board. They're going to give the first update of the evening. And I know we've got Scott presenting, and I don't know if we have it. I'll let you guys introduce yourself.
Good evening. My name is Scott Wall. I'm with the California Air Resources Board, and I am the AB 617 community lead from the state perspective for the city of Shafter and the area that we're working with here in Shafter. The district has asked us to come back, and a lot of the information I'm presenting tonight was the basis of my last presentation a few meetings ago. But what we're doing this time is coming back, and now that the list of strategies has been offered up, we're wanting to get your input on which of the state strategies should be included in the Shafter Community Emission Reduction Program. So we'll dig a little bit deeper into still high level, because I'm not a regulatory guy, like I said last time, but we'll dig a little bit deeper into kind of what those strategies are, and then we'll be looking for your input on which ones to include. So the evening kind of layout of our discussion, we're going to start with looking at the actions currently underway. From there, we will move on to kind of looking at what the new community-focused actions map to Shafter from the CAR perspective. So when we kind of listen to the community input and look at what the district has put forward in the strategies document, these are the things that we kind of have offered up saying we think that these fit with the community of Shafter. Not to say that they're the only ones that fit. So then the next thing we'll do is look at the additional statewide strategies for Shafter for your consideration. So we'll kind of talk through what additional strategies we don't currently have offered up for the strategies document, and then I'll try and get your input on which of those you think would apply and that you would like to see integrated into the emission reduction program. And then finally, we'll have a little bit of a discussion of maybe some new ideas that you have that we haven't offered up that are the things that the Air Resources Board is responsible for. So that's kind of what the format for the next 30 minutes is going to look like. So you saw this slide during my presentation a few meetings ago. These are basically all of the existing state strategies that CARB is responsible for that we've already kind of rolled out and were pre-AB 617. So these strategies on this listing here, they're basically just showing you the large number of CARB strategies that are already in place and achieving emissions reductions in the Shafter area and statewide. Because these were actually pre-AB 617, these are not things that you could actually capture in the Community Emission Reduction Program because the SERP is really all about new actions above and beyond what we have in place right now. And so what you'll see is, as we go through some of these and I start rolling out new actions, I want to kind of make sure that this is clear. You'll see a lot of the same kind of terminologies. So as an example, you'll see transport refrigeration unit, which is an existing strategy right now, but you'll also see that as a new strategy because we're actually kind of putting the wheels in motion for a new regulation to transition what are the transport refrigeration units right now that are like cleaner diesel, but our new strategy is to actually transition those to zero emissions. So a lot of the terminology that you see on this slide, you'll also see in the new strategies, because we actually already have some strategies in place that we're looking at making them more stringent or coming up with kind of new actions, if you will. So I also wanted to point out that some of the concerns that we have heard from the committee that we're not really necessarily directly addressing in our CARB strategies is, as an example, the off-road diesel vehicle regulation. There currently are not any additional new strategies for the off-road diesel vehicle regulation, but those are currently covered in the existing state strategies, so we really couldn't offer those up as part of the SERP because it's not a new strategy. So I wanted to kind of clarify that as well. Am I going too fast? Is my pace okay? Okay. Thank you. I can talk a little bit fast when I get nervous, so. So this next slide is basically, again, all about new actions. So these are actions that CARB is undertaking now. They're kind of in a variety of places as far as development. And these are the new actions that we actually have mapped from hearing what your concerns are and seeing what was included in the initial strategies document from the district. And so the heavy-duty trucks concern, there's been a lot of talk about heavy-duty trucks. We mapped over, one of our strategies is the truck and bus rule supporting actions. And basically, the truck and bus rule supporting actions is CARB is developing and proposing new supporting actions to the truck and bus regulation. And these potential actions include amendments to warranty and useful life provisions, adding a lower in-use emission performance level, and increasing inspections in the Shafter community. So those are the strategies that are new actions that we're looking at undertaking to help address the concern of heavy-duty trucks. And the truck and bus local idling pilot study, CARB, in partnership with you, the steering committee, and the Air District, plans to conduct a pilot study to assess local idling impacts from trucks and buses. The steering committee and the Air District, we're hoping, will also advocate for clean idle trucks and buses to idle no more than 5 minutes when in Shafter. So that's one of the, again, new strategies that we're offering up. And then as we move over to trains, there has been some discussion about concerns about trains. And so we're considering several measures targeted at reducing emissions from locomotive operations and diesel emissions at rail yards. These include strategies to reduce emissions from idling freight and passenger rail activities and reducing emissions from older, dirtier locomotives currently operating in California. So that's the strategy there. Then moving on to dairies and other livestock, the strategy that we've offered up is the short-lived climate pollutant plan, and we talked about this in the last meeting as well. But basically, as part of the short-lived climate pollutant strategy, CARB is working with some of our sister agencies and other stakeholders, and will continue to encourage and support near-term actions by dairies to reduce manure methane emissions through financial incentives, collaboration to overcome barriers, development of policies to encourage renewable natural gas production where appropriate as a pollution control strategy, and other market support. Then moving on to distribution centers, another concern that that we've heard some discussion about. We have offered up the advanced clean trucks. We're basically working through a public process right now to develop and consider proposals for new approaches and strategies that may transition to zero emission technology. Those truck fleets that operate in urban centers have stop and go driving cycles and or are centrally maintained and fueled. And then finally, under the lawn and garden equipment, we have the small off-road engines And that basically next year in 2020, we are going to consider new standards for small off-road engines, which are spark ignition engines rated at or below 19 kilowatts and used primarily for lawn, garden, and other outdoor power equipment. So all of these strategies here have been approved by our board of and by our executive office. These are things that kind of the wheel's already in motion. We're moving forward with them. And the strategies on the next page is the same story. All of these things have already been kind of, we've been given direction by our board to move forward with these things. So really at this point, what we're trying to do tonight is to make sure that the strategies that we've actually mapped to Shafter fit with what the concerns you really have are. So my first question for you is, are there any of these kind of strategies that I just kind of gave a quick summary for that you think do not necessarily fit in the Shafter Community Emissions Reduction Program?
Or if you want just more information, like if you don't fully understand some of them, we went through them kind of quick.
Yeah, you certainly can ask questions. I'll do my best to answer any questions about the strategies. We have a lot, and I've done the best I can to kind of glean and understand them from a pretty high level. But certainly if there's anything that I haven't explained enough or correctly, I'm certainly happy to do my best to field questions as well.
Maybe just for my benefit, but could you take the heavy-duty truck strategy and step through practically what that would mean to me as a resident here in Shafter?
Walking through what it means to you in Shafter. Well, I mean, I think it's, these are all statewide strategies. I'll start with that. So certainly looking at the local level, when we talk about actually amending warranty and useful life provisions, making sure that the trucks coming through here are cleaner.
My question was specifically designed for Shafter.
Okay. So the question was, are any of these strategies specifically designed for Shafter? And the answer is no.
Okay.
So that's kind of, okay, gotcha. So these are because we have statewide authority, basically everything that we are kind of all the regulatory and actions that we're taking are impacting statewide, but we certainly are focusing right now on the strategies that most impact the disadvantaged communities, the ones that are most heavily burdened by the air pollution, and the and that will help the AB 617 communities.
So as an example, being an AB 617 community and a strategy for trucks is stepping up inspections of trucks. Would that mean specifically for Shafter there would be more inspections and enforcement of trucks here versus some other place?
That is absolutely a possibility, and that's, I think, what we start building in the Community Emission Reduction Program.
So that's what I meant by how will it specifically affect Shafter. So
gotcha.
In that particular case, that's different than another community.
Yes.
Okay.
And I say that that's, you know, again, that's true for all AB 617 communities, that, you know, if there is an opportunity and the emission reduction program is developed with the request for increasing the inspections and enforcement, that certainly would be something that we would be looking at doing to help support.
And just for those of you who aren't aware, and Scott, maybe walk us through this a little bit. Rules were put in place several years ago that basically require trucks to be cleaner, and they were phased in over time. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So you probably haven't noticed, but maybe you have, that if you go back maybe 10, 15 years and you drove up and down the 99, you would often, probably every time you drove the 99, would see a truck with a big black plume of smoke coming out of it. So if you look back 15, 20 years, that was very common. Now, if you see that truck with a big black plume of smoke, there's a pretty good chance that it is breaking the rules. And what Scott was, and correct me, what Scott was referring to is that in the AB 617 communities, the SERP may include a provision where they will be looking more closely in these communities to find those trucks that are breaking the rules.
Increased enforcement is absolutely one of the elements, but it's also taking the next step and actually making them even cleaner.
Yes, jump in. Yeah, I'm just trying to take everything like that. I'm assuming that people are like me and they don't.
So another component of the SERP is also a enforcement history. So that will be part of the SERP is a 3-year enforcement history within the community, and also a plan moving forward to ensure that the regs on the books are the baseline that Scott mentioned of existing regs, to make sure that they're enforced as well as new programs or strategies are enforced as well.
I just wanted to ask, when Jamie was saying we're trying to make them cleaner, what direction are we going? Other than inspections and regulations, where do you see this going with the...
Well, I mean, there certainly our board has placed a very strong emphasis on zero emission technology where kind of feasible and practical. And I think outside of that, it's just, you know, there's increases in technology, cleaner fuels. There's control technologies to help reduce the emissions coming out the tailpipes. So there's a variety of things that have kind of evolved and improved with technology that has helped to kind of clean up a lot of those heavy-duty diesel trucks. And like onboard diagnostics is kind of a newer thing, and we'll talk about that in the next slide, but that's another thing that kind of helps to kind of stay on top of the emissions systems of the trucks and report when there's a problem. As the trucks, you know, as they get older and the parts get older, they can kind of, their in-use performance could decrease, increasing the pollution. So there's onboard diagnostics that are automatically built into trucks, I think, starting 2010 or later, that are helping to control those things as well.
And in our first couple meetings, you were saying that a lot of the pollution is brought on by the 5 and 99 traffic. So we're centrally located in between that at Shafter is. So when we're talking about inspections and regulations, are we going to go outside of Shafter to try and do, how do we do those?
I think that would be something that the enforcement team would probably want to work with the district and figure out really where those are. And certainly part of what you can do is if you think that there are areas outside of the area that have trucks that are maybe dirtier trucks or kind of not the greatest and latest and greatest are coming through Shafter and impacting the quality here, that should be part of the discussion as well.
Yeah. A couple of comments. I'm just follow up with what John mentioned about, you know, something like that. That's a mobile source, and how, you know, if you're going to have guards at the 7-mile radius and prevent these trucks from coming in that don't pass the criteria that's passed for our SERP. I mean, that's maybe a kind of absurd example, but you know, I think that's kind of what we're thinking about. The other is just to follow up from last meeting. A lot of these strategies were in that grid a lot more detail than we have available in the materials tonight. And there was a promise that those materials would be returned to the ones that wrote our names on it. Are those here tonight?
That's what I mentioned at the very beginning. I said that we did get the comments. We are drafting all of the responses to them. We hope to have them at this meeting, but because of the holiday, we didn't have them. So they should be going out tomorrow or Wednesday. So I apologize.
Okay. And the reason I bring that up, and I'm sorry I didn't understand that's what we were talking about, but you use the terms feasible and practical, and I think that's a big part of the concern when I went through and looked at some of those proposals. Some of them are great ideas, probably easily implemented. Others, it seems like a regulatory nightmare to try to roll those out, especially forcing manufacturers to have this expanded warranty and inspection thing. You know, I just wonder how that scores on the practical or feasible scales, because it seems like it's been mentioned a couple times tonight.
Well, so, I mean, right now, again, these are all the Air Resources Board strategies that we are in the process of creating right now. So all I can really tell you is that there are going to, you know, some of them are regulations, some of them are amendments to regulations, some of them are just simply supportive actions. And so the regulatory process will play out. The amendments to the regulatory process will play out. And actually, I have a slide at the end just for anybody that doesn't understand the regulatory process with CARB of kind of how you best can stay on top of the progress for these different kind of amendments and regulations. And so I believe that as it relates to our strategies, those things are going to be obviously addressed as they begin to craft the language and look at the regulation and start doing the economic impact analysis and all of those things. So I think several of the strategies that we have right now are pretty high level and ideas, and aren't really evolved enough yet for us to speak real in depth about them. But again, these are statewide strategies. So when you talk about CARB being there and being a gatekeeper to people coming into the Shafter community to kind of gauge them by the Shafter SERP, that's not how this would work. It's basically, it's inspecting them for the statewide standards to make sure that they're actually in compliance with current regulation. It's, there wouldn't be any specific kind of numbers or measures within the Shafter SERP that would actually, you know, create a violation for a diesel truck, if you will, that's based upon only the SERP. These are, again, all statewide compliance issues.
Trade. Not, I don't know that this is a good or a bad. I think it's a good analogy. I'm not sure if it's good or bad, but it's a state. There are statewide speed limits today, and if I know there's five highway patrolmen strung out along a certain road, then I'm either going to drive the speed limit or I'm going to avoid that road. And I guess the thing I would like to make sure I understand as we go forward with statewide strategies is to what extent they will be more enforced or more focused on this community maybe than another place. So that I can, you know, that may be really good and what we want, and then I don't want people speeding up and down my street, but at the same time, I'm not sure I want to be over-regulated either. So sure. I just want to understand.
Fair enough, and I can't answer that right now. I'm not sure what the enforcement plan is going to entail. So I don't know at this point that we have any specific answers for that. There is going to be kind of at a later meeting, there's going to be a discussion of enforcement, and I think that might be a great question to answer then. Do you have anything you wanted to add, Vernon?
So for example, within some of the other communities, diesel idling or truck idling is an area of high concern. So signage, posting signage within areas that have typically been a problem might be something that the committee is interested in identifying those areas and having some extra emphasis in those particular areas. But it's that kind of an effort that could occur too.
Any other questions or discussion about this? So kind of I'll come back. So any of these that we've mapped to Shafter that anybody thinks that don't belong necessarily here? Okay. So this next slide actually shows even more new state strategies that are available to include in the Shafter SERP. And part of what we're hoping to do this evening, again, is get your input on these. All of these strategies here have been basically approved to move forward by our board and our executive officers, and they're in various stages of development. And I'll just do my best to do justice of a very brief summary of each of them, because as you can see, there's quite a few of them. The innovative clean transit up in the upper left-hand corner, it's basically, it's the intent of the innovative clean transit is to accelerate the use of advanced technologies in heavy-duty vehicles to meet air quality, climate, and public health goals. So the main goals of this strategy would be to support the near-term deployment of zero-emission buses where the economics are viable and where transit service can be maintained or expanded, and to secure binding commitments from the state's transit providers for a long-term vision for transforming to zero-emission technologies across all transit modes, and to partner with transit agencies to pilot innovative approaches to improve access to transit systems with zero-emissions first and last-mile solutions. So any questions on the clean transit? The smoke inspection program is basically that kind of is married pretty deeply with our heavy-duty inspection and maintenance that I'll kind of give you a quick download on that here in a minute. But basically, the smoke inspection program requires annual, opacity self-testing for California fleets with two or more vehicles. And again, it works along with the heavy-duty inspection and maintenance below. Then there's the heavy-duty onboard diagnostic regulations. I kind of touched on that a few minutes ago. So it's just basically it's onboard diagnostic systems that really do a very good job of, over the lifetime of a vehicle, of kind of making sure that the emissions don't kind of degrade, that the car remains as clean in use as it's supposed to be. And it also basically trips an error code if it finds any malfunctions in the emission system, and then it stores that code as well with a troubleshooting diagnostic for the technician that would be looking at what caused the code to trip. Heavy-duty vehicles over 14,000 pounds have been equipped with onboard diagnostics, starting with a model year 2010. And the onboard diagnostic is also expected to be incorporated as part of any heavy-duty inspection and maintenance program that is developed in the future. And basically, CARB does develop those system regulations for vehicles sold in California and then certifies these onboard diagnostic systems to ensure that they're meeting the onboard diagnostic system requirements. So that's a third new strategy for your consideration. Advanced Clean Cars 2, it's a pretty young one right now. I don't really have much more to share with you other than it's measures aimed at further reducing emissions from passenger vehicles, and I don't really have any more detail beyond that for you. The heavy-duty inspection and maintenance, again, this is all about kind of making sure that the emissions control systems are operating correctly and that the inspection program that we have right now is the heavy-duty vehicle inspection program and the periodic smoke inspection program that I told you about. And basically, these regulations require heavy-duty vehicles operating in California to be inspected for excessive smoking and tampering. In July 2018, so about a year ago, CARB approved amendments to the heavy-duty vehicle inspection program and the periodic smoke inspection program to reduce the smoke limits to levels more appropriate for today's modern technology. And what we're doing now is we're exploring the development of a more comprehensive heavy-duty inspection and maintenance program, which would help ensure all vehicle emissions control systems are adequately maintained throughout the vehicle's operating lives. And then the zero-emission drayage trucks. You saw drayage trucks as one of our kind of existing strategies in that first slide I showed you. And basically what we've been doing is making sure, again, that the technology has been cleaning up drayage trucks. And so what this is about is looking at making sure that equipment at ports and intermodal rail yards, such as yard trucks, gantry cranes, container handlers, forklifts, and other types of equipment. Basically, we are looking at trying to transition those to zero emission. I'm sorry, I just said cargo handling. I just mixed up cargo handling and drayage. So it's kind of the same thing. They're both currently regulated. We're looking at strategies to actually transition the drayage trucks, the cargo handling equipment, and the transport refrigeration units all to zero emission. And those are all, again, three currently regulated to certain standards of diesel pollution. And then the next two, the chrome plating control measure and the composite wood control measure, these are airborne toxic control measures. There's currently a measure for chrome plating. I don't think chrome plating is an issue here in Shafter. So just so you know what that is, basically any facility that that does chrome plating. This new measure is going to look at having them reduce their emissions by requiring the use of chemical fume suppressants and or add-on controls to meet the stringent emission limits. And then composite wood. Again, composite wood is basically it's made with formaldehyde, and there's different types of a fiberboard, particle board that's made with it, including some furniture that's made of composite wood products. So this is actually looking at amending to be more stringent for the composite wood products. And then finally, we are working on a model rule that would be developed by us that local air districts can follow for their commercial cooking rules. So we're evaluating current emission reduction requirements for commercial cooking operations that prepare food for human consumption, and if necessary, to make improvements to achieve additional reductions in PM10, PM2.5, and volatile organic compound emissions that contribute to ozone formation. So that the lengthy, long-winded, as short as I could make it, description of the additional strategies that we have not mapped to Schaffter, but certainly wanted to find out if you thought any of these should be included in your community emission reduction program. And I'm going to say this is not, I wouldn't say that this is a closed-in discussion either. If you want to go back and read more and kind of give input after the meeting, it's not like speak now or forever hold your peace. It's kind of an open-ended conversation.
Okay, so just so I understand, and you have to treat me like a third grader. So we have strategies about trucks and, you know, heavy duty trucks, and then over here we have more strategies about trucks. So I'm assuming this is just taking those strategies and making them more stringent. And
depending upon kind of what the vehicle is, whether it's a heavy-duty truck or a drayage truck, certainly the strategies are a little bit different based upon kind of the size and type of equipment.
What I'm trying to do is understand how that affects us. So these are all statewide strategies.
Correct.
The previous ones are existing strategies of which we can say, this looks like it fits us pretty well. These are more or less proposed advancements to those strategies, and we're supposed to either decide we support them or we don't support them, or they would be good for us or they would be bad for us.
I think what we're looking for is, so all of these strategies, again, statewide, we're saying, hey, these are things that we're working on.
I understand that.
We're working
What I'm trying to make sure I understand is these are strategies that the state has today, and there's certain rules and regulations, and there's a piece, which is the previous slide.
These are also rules that are in effect today. Both slides.
Okay, so this one here. This slide here is existing.
And the next slide.
This one here is new strategies that we have based upon the first kind of strategy document that the district put together, and what we have heard by being involved in these meetings. These are the kind of the ones that we thought, these seem like they're actually pretty good fit, new strategies. So we've actually
said, these are existing strategies that the state has today.
These are new strategies.
No, these are not existing strategies.
This slide and this slide are all post AB 617 strategies that you can include in your SERP. And so what we would basically do from here is, if you said, hey, yes, the zero-emission cargo handling equipment would be good for the warehousing kind of port area, as an example. What we would do at the state level is say, okay, we'll go ahead and add that into the SERP, and then it's going to be on us to basically go in and see, okay, what are the targets? What do we think, and this is work that's happening right now at CARB, with all of these, what are the things, how much reduction can we actually think that we can get in Schaffter to then set up the target for Schaffter to include in your emission reduction program? So all of that kind of calculation of the emissions reduction is something that we would do, and that would basically help you with whatever the strategies are, help you to achieve those targets.
Okay, so as an example, and I don't want to sort of hog the mic here, and maybe I can do this offline, but as an example, zero emission drayage trucks. we say that's an important thing. What happens then?
What happens then is we actually take it back to CARB and we say, okay, they want to include zero emission drayage trucks in the emission reduction program. And then we work with basically our technical folks to start taking a look at trying to get in kind of, I guess, maybe an inventory, if you will, of how many trucks and if we actually were able to turn the X number of trucks that we believe work in the Shafter area. And we would then achieve an emission reduction of X number of tons per year of.
And how do you get there? How do you achieve?
I'll let Vernon handle that question because he is the technical branch chief. So.
So backing up a little bit too, the basis for a lot of these strategies are it's the statute, the AB 617 statute itself required CARB to put together a statewide strategy, and the blueprint serves as that strategy as well as guidelines for the program. So when you look in, I believe it's Appendix F,
and.
There's strategies listed in the blueprint, most of which are here. So that's the statewide strategies that go over and above the existing statewide strategies for the purposes of making a commitment to AB 617. And our board had to approve those strategies.
Oh.
So now in terms of Shafter, the question is moving forward on setting a targets for Shafter on how many tons reduction are needed, what kind of pollutants, understanding how the state commitment feeds into that overall commitment is important. It gives you a feeling for how much more do we need, perhaps locally, how much are we getting from these particular commitments. So where you want to include these in the SERP, that CARB staff can go back, we can talk with our reg staff, and where they have enough information to quantify tons of benefits within Shafter of these regs, we can work on that and provide, work with the district to provide an estimate of individually and cumulatively, what's the benefit of the statewide programs. Again, it informs you and the district on how that looks overall with the local programs, the state programs, to reach the goals that you're trying to reach.
Okay, but you have to treat me like I'm a third grader, maybe a second grader. If we looked at zero emission drayage trucks as a strategy, I think what I just heard you say is that as an AB 617 community, we can establish a higher set of regs than what might happen in the next community over that's not an AB 617 community.
Or inform the reg staff on specifically what types of drayage trucks, there aren't drayage trucks here because there's no port.
There are drayage trucks here. But
in terms of, the particular types of operations, the facilities, maybe getting a little more information of what is the right timing of implementing the reg. So maybe more of a focus within the community that the steering committee is interested in could help in the process. And certainly participating in the regulatory process as well. We have some links at the end of this too.
Yeah, but it would still be a statewide. It would not be any. It would not be a specific regulation for Shafter only. It would be a statewide regulation. But I think, kind of to echo what Vernon is saying, is where you could actually at this point, since it's regulation in progress, is that you have an opportunity to weigh in on that and give feedback and comment on it and actually kind of guide the things that are most important for Shafter so that the end result of the regulation would be beneficial for Shafter.
But the regulation at the end of the day would affect everyone statewide.
It would be a statewide regulation.
But there could, because we're an AB 617 community, have a greater emphasis on enforcement of the regulation.
That could be part of the conversation of the enforcement plan when the district and CARB kind of begin discussing enforcement in Shafter.
Yeah, how this all fits, I'm not sure that the majority of the committee understands. And it's confusing to me.
It's confusing to us, too, just so
and
you
I,
know.
And I sense that.
Yes.
That's why I keep asking the questions.
And keep asking the questions, and I hope that as we go a little bit further in this process, it will begin to make sense. No one's ever done this, so we are moving forward as we go. But the way I look at it, these are all, we're making a big cake, and we're all bringing different ingredients to the kitchen. Now, in Oakland, they may be using organic flour, and here we may be using just, you know, your regular flour off the shelf, but, you know, it's the same ingredient. There just may be subtle nuances that are different in the different communities. It is complex, especially when you get moved back out a little bit, and we have some of these things that are going to be applied statewide, and the nuances within each community may be different depending on the community needs.
And if I could just make one more comment and maybe ask a question. I think one of the things that is important to me, two things that are important to me. One is that as we go through this process, whatever we do benefits the community and it's prioritized well. And the other thing is that I understand, at least, and I think the committee should understand, what sorts of impacts it has on the people who are in business in the community. And without understanding this, it's impossible for me to know, you know, how that all fits. So I will undoubtedly keep asking these questions so that I have a good sense.
Pass the microphone back to Scott. And I'm going to let Scott speak, and then I'm going to let this Scott finish up. If you have additional questions afterwards, then they'll stick around.
So I agree that it's complex, but I think if I'm reading between the lines, I think one of the concerns I have is that we've got two screens worth of strategies, and we don't know, they're still in flux. We don't know how they're going to be enforced. We don't know if they're going to be enforced statewide or maybe more intensely in Shafter. We don't know, I don't know what piece of the pie zero emission drayage trucks. We have a certain amount of air quality problems produced by drayage trucks in Shafter today. I don't know what that is. Let's say it's 0.5% of our air quality problem is from drayage trucks. And we say, yeah, we want that. We reduce that by 0.5%. Did it really help us in Shafter, or did it just make it more expensive to do business in Shafter? And I don't think that we as the commission have enough data yet to know the groups of these air quality problems, heavy trucks, yard handling equipment, chrome plating. We don't know what percentage of our problem those individual issues create. So there, how can we be informed on what we want to support without knowing if we're attacking a problem that's 30% of our problem or 0.5% of our problem and 90% of the cost? I don't think any of us have that data, and I don't think you do either. So we're stuck with this risk of supporting and implementing strategies that go off to Sacramento to turn into regulations outside of our control or understanding. And the whole process, I understand you're under a timeline, but I think the timeline is what's creating part of the problem here, is you don't have the time to educate this committee on the risks and the benefits of what we're being asked to propose.
So the state is committed to these already. So what we want to do is be able to provide an estimate of what kind of benefit from the statewide programs are you getting. So from a local program versus the state program, how much benefit is coming from both?
The best we can do is break even versus the rest of the state. Inside our 7-mile radius, we have no upside here. We have only downside. We can have more stringent enforcement and unknown benefits. It seems like.
All right. Oh, I would, just for the sake of time, we've got to kind of keep moving. I definitely hear that, and I would say to you that we will continue to try and give you more specific data to feed this. Some of it is in some of those inventory tools that are online that you have where you can do some comparison. It does get a little challenging with some of the mobile sources, but we will do our best to try and have more information with that. But I am sensitive to time and do...
I personally need the descriptions of the strategies, this slide and the other one, because, I mean, looking at this, I don't remember what you said. I mean, what are the details? I mean, it would help me understand that.
One of the things I was going to offer up is actually if it would be helpful. We don't really have, I mean, I've got my speaking notes, but they are not authorized for distribution because they're not, you know, CARB approved. It was basically me going out to the different areas of our website that describe these programs and kind of summarizing in my words what they are. And so that, unfortunately, with the quick turnaround time in the holiday, I wasn't able to pull together much more of a handout beyond what I gave you a few weeks ago. A lot of this information is in the presentation and links that are posted online. I can also put together, when I get back, and maybe ask the district to post it to the site, just a one-pager that actually has links where you can just click on it and it will take you out to the area of our site that would actually link out to all of these things on one page. You could do your own reading, study up. Feel free to, you know, email me questions. I'll do my best to get them answered for you. But certainly, again, not necessarily looking for any hard kind of answers and commitments tonight, but just letting you know kind of the direction we're going and the things that are available for you to consider that are the things that we're working on right now to include in your emission reduction program. And this, you know, it's a community focused program. So, you know, if you say we can't support any of these, we're not going to argue. The flip side is, you know, they are going to become kind of they're going to become statewide measures. And so, if there is opportunity for you to actually feed into and take kind of take accountability, if you will, or kind of quantify some emissions reductions as part of your emission reduction program, that might not be a bad thing, because these are statewide strategies, and they're not going to be specifically focused on Shafter. And at this point, you'll have an opportunity to inform kind of where things are going from here with the strategies.
Did you want to go through your last two slides real quick?
Yeah, So we were hoping if we had a little bit more time, but we're out of time, but we were hoping also for new ideas. Understanding, of course, with new ideas, if we're taking something brand new back to our board and our executive office, basically, especially when you're talking about the regulatory process, if you have kind of ideas or thoughts for something that you would see as a new regulation, as an example, that a new regulation can actually take years to develop due to the research, economic impact assessment, environmental reviews, outreach, legal, all of those things. So new ideas, we welcome them. We'll take them to our board, to our executive office, but understand, kind of disclaimer was that a lot of times new ideas don't get implemented right away. So just depends upon what the new ideas are. So I'll just encourage you, if you have anything rolling in your mind that would be a statewide idea, to please email me, email the district, call me, and we will certainly kind of take that in and start digesting it and see what we can do on that.
You can also use the comment cards that we passed out.
And the last thing that I want to share with you is basically this on this slide here, and this, I believe, packet is or will be posted on the district website. I'll basically take these links and expand them. These are links out to all of the programs that we have already mapped to Shafter in that second slide I showed you that was kind of like the heavy-duty trucks, rail, all that. These are links out to those programs on our website. And the little kind of snapshot I showed you down here is basically within each program you would need to go in, and if you wanted to get email updates on where things, you know, get notifications of board hearings or of outreach events or opportunities for comments, you would basically, a good way to keep on top of that would be to subscribe to the email updates for that particular program. And so that was just to help you understand how to participate in the regulatory program. And again, I will commit for all of these strategies when I get back at some point this week to creating a link that when they upload it, you'd be able to actually just go in and click it if you have it electronically and get out to the program pages to kind of do a little bit more learning and self-help on those programs. So I think we're probably out of time.
Cool.
So.
Scott will be here after the meeting. If you have additional questions, again, feel free to use the comment cards. And I'm going to ask Edgar, who was here, I don't know. He's still here, from Department of Pesticide Regulation to come on up, and we will switch him over.
Hello, everybody. My name is Edgar Vidrio. Before I begin, I want to apologize. I have a cold, so if what I'm saying, I need to repeat it or explain it in a different way, speak louder, let me know, and I'll do so. So we've been asked by the Air District to address some pesticide-specific measures that were proposed by the steering committee in a few meetings ago. So the intent of my talk today is basically go over those mitigation measures that were proposed in the letter that I have here on the right, and it's getting a little cut off, but essentially there was a document that was about a 3 to 4 page document that had several emission reduction strategies. On the back page of that document, there was a 7 pesticide-specific points. So what we've done at DPR is essentially we looked at all those 7 proposed measures, and we try to respond to them in terms of whether this is a requires a regulation, this could be actually implemented in the community, or what is some of the considerations that the committee should take into account before proceeding further with them. So essentially, just to recap, the 7 proposed measures are 1, ban all on-tarp applications of 1,3-dichloropropene or 1,3-D. Reduce the 1,3-D annual cap and or establish a new cap on a more granular basis, whether that's shafter or that's a 1-by-1-mile section. Then there was a notification proposed measure, which was basically a twofold point, which one was to make all notice of intent, or NOIs. These are basically a document that's supposed to be submitted by the applicant for any restricted pesticide applications to make those NOIs publicly available, and as well as the response from the County Agricultural Commissioner's Office in regards to whether they approve or denied of those NOIs. And then the second part of that was to provide real-time 48-hour notification via text or emails, as well as an opt-out for drip-prone. Then measure 4 was ban all aerial applications of pesticide TACs, or toxic air contaminants. Establish 24/7 buffer zones of 1 mile for all pesticide TACs for all sensitive sites. Request an evaluation of all carcinogenous TACs, including pesticides, and then create an emission reduction plan based on that analysis. And lastly, the same thing, but instead of carcinogenic, is reproductive toxicity TACs. So the way we approach these, basically, we're going to address point 1 and 2. Because they talk about the pesticide 1,3-dichloropropene. Then we're going to do 4, 5, 6, and 7 because they're all talking about pesticide toxic air contaminants. And then we're going to talk about the notification proposal because that one could get a little bit more intricate and there's a little more information that we need to provide on that one. So again, going back to 1 and 2, which the proposal is to ban all on-tarp applications of 1,3-dichloropropene and reduce the annual cap. So in the past 2-3 months, maybe a little longer, the Department of Pesticide Regulation has announced that we're currently working on a mitigation, a statewide regulation measure to address all 1,3-D exposures. Part of the rationale for this action has to do with a 24-hour air concentration that we measure here in the city of Shafter in January 2018, which was at a value of 50.5 parts per billion. Now, our 72-hour threshold is 110, so we didn't exceed that on a 24-hour basis. However, it did cause the subchronic or the 13-week period to be exceeded. Additionally, on the city of Parlier, which is in Fresno County, we had two high concentration incidences with 1,3-D. One of them was in 2017, which was a value of 15 parts per billion. And then recently in October 2018, we had a value of 111 parts per billion. Again, that's a 24-hour basis. We have our target is 72 hours, so we don't know if we exceeded that on a 72-hour basis. However, we do know that we exceeded subchronic, the chronic, and lifetime based on that high value. So the department is taking action. We're currently following the state require pesticide TAC legal process, and the next slide I'll talk about what that is. But we're currently working with other agencies, including OEHA, the Air Resources Board, the Air Districts, and the County Act Commissioners to propose new regulation measures for 1,3-D. And that could include updating the township cap. That could include banning certain pesticide application methods. As part of the regulatory process, there's a public comment period. So all of this will be made available to the public in the coming months. And actually what that pesticide application or regulatory process is, and I want to talk about this one because it actually affects measured 4, 5, 6, and 7. So state law requires DPR to follow a specific legal process to evaluate and control pesticide TACs. That process includes an analysis of all readily available data, consultation with agencies, including the Office of Environmental Human Health Assessment, or OEHA, the Air Resources Board, the Air Districts, and the County Agricultural Commissioners. Then we also have to go through a scientific peer review process. This is a committee that's put together by Air Resources Board. It's made up with a lot of academics from different areas, and they evaluate the validity of the scientific data that were used to justify some of the mitigation measures that were taken into account. Then we actually do need to develop and implement the control measures. And lastly, again, it's a public process, so we have to go through a public comment to hear input from the industry, from public, and for other stakeholders. Because there's an actual legal mandated process that we have to follow for all pesticide TACs, we cannot arbitrarily establish any emission reduction measures without having strong scientific basis, as, again, we have to go through this process. So because of this process, arbitrarily determining or eliminating certain application methods, requiring certain restrictions, is not readily available in terms of what DPR is able to do at this stage. We have to have a clear exposure issue, a clear imminent issue that we have to address as a department, then we have to follow the process, which is what we're doing for 1,3-D at this stage. We're going through that process. I believe Scott mentioned earlier, the regulatory process is a lengthy process. It can take up to 2 years to actually implement something in California because of the legal pathway that we have to follow. The same thing with the pesticide TAC chlorpyrifos. That's another one that basically the department determined that there's an actual exposure issue, and we're going through that regulatory process of actually canceling the product. So again, that cancellation is also going to go through this process as well. So now to talk about point three, which was the notification. This one, I believe, basically I want to provide additional information. And in your handouts, there's a table that has the top 100 pesticides that are used in within 7 miles of Shafter, the boundaries that was approved by this steering committee. And this is for 2013 through 17. Basically, they're ranked in terms of pounds used. And we have basically the ranking, the pesticide name, the amount used per year, the actual number of applications per year, and then some basically identifiers, whether it's what kind of group does it belong to, whether it's classified as a toxic air contaminant, whether it's a restricted material, or whether it's listed on the Prop 65 as a probable carcinogen, whether it's cancer or developmental neurotox. So basically in that table, like I said, there's top 100. These basically, they're all here. But what I wanted to point out is that on this slide, I basically just sorted them through, and I'm only showing out of those top 100 which ones are either a toxic air contaminant or which ones are restricted material. Basically, we have a total of 8 restricted materials out of the top 100, and we have a total of 7 toxic air contaminants. The reason why I'm showing this is because that proposal that talks about the notice of intent will only apply to 8 of these of the top 100 pesticides used in the within 7 miles of Shafter. So again, you know, 92 of the top 100 wouldn't be included, especially because in order to require notice of intent or any kind of notification for any of the other pesticide products, a new regulation will need to be put into place. Because, again, we cannot arbitrarily request something that is not legally required at this stage, only for the restricted materials. That's why I want to show that 8 out of the top 100 will qualify into that proposal of the NOIs. On top of that, some other considerations that I wanted you to be aware of is that currently DPR does not receive any NOIs. Those are sent to the county in which the pest application will take place. And then a limitation to knowing about the NOIs is that the County Agriculture Commissioner Office, they receive an NOI, and it has to be received within 5 days of when the application will begin. However, if the application doesn't take place, the applicant can resubmit another NOI, and they still have another 5 days. On top of that, it's only when the application can begin, but some applications could take multiple days to conclude. So you're not sure exactly what the time length will be. And the reason why I bring this up is because during the World Cafe, about 2 meetings ago, I believe, one of the concerns that we heard was about basically being able to get notified about an application so that people are able to leave their homes, come back a few hours later when the application probably is completed, and they're able to avoid any exposure issues. That may not be addressed during the NOI process because, again, you never know when the application actually took place or how long it will take. Also, the County Agriculture Commissioner doesn't necessarily know if the application actually took place or not until after they submit a PUR, a pesticide use report. The PUR can be submitted up to the 10th of the following month. So depending on when they actually applied, it can be up to a month for them to actually receive the PUR information. Lastly, I believe in your notes, we have basically the NOIs has information on the pesticide product and not the active ingredients. So it will take some translation to get the AI information that or the active ingredient information that we're looking at. Also, lastly, just the sheer number of applications that are taking place. It's about an average of about 1,300 applications that take place each year that will require notification. Now, again, I just want to emphasize that that proposed measure of notification may work. However, it has to be currently restricted to restricted materials. Otherwise, a state regulation will have to be implemented by DPR. I believe that's all I have, so I will open up to any questions that you guys may have. Oh, actually, sorry, I did want to point out real quick. So DPR released a new pesticide incident reporting application. It's an app that basically you're able to download in your phone app store. It allows for it's meant for agricultural workers, restaurant workers, basically people that may be in a location where they may be more exposed to pesticide applications nearby. Essentially, the application, the way it works is it's an app. You're able to take a picture. You're able to put information, and then you submit that pesticide incidence issue or concern, and then that will go to the County Agriculture Commissioner Office and DPR if you provide enough information. If there's not enough information to clearly identify where the incidents took place, it will just go to DPR for them to distribute to whatever county it might be in. With that, any questions?
Are there questions? That was a lot of information.
Thank you. And thank you for the presentation. On the different on the seven different proposed measures, I was a little confused. Is that measures that you guys are well that we're contemplating? And do those measures have to go through the like regulatory process, or is that something that has already been like done, or is that something that we'll have to do?
So no, essentially, at least the approach that we got was basically taking a look at the proposed measures that were circulated by the steering committee a few meetings ago in that document, and we were evaluating each of those measures to see one if a statewide regulation will be if it goes through. Do we need a statewide regulation? If we do, is it feasible? Is it something that we can do now? If not, is what's another pathway? So essentially, we evaluated for that aspect of it. So there's nothing in the works that I'm aware of, except for the 1,3-D chloropropane work that we're doing right now and the chlorpyrifos cancellation that we're going in at this stage. However, we do have monitoring. So one of those things is as soon as we see any issue, any kind of exposure, then we evaluate that pesticide on an individual basis. But as at this stage, we're not evaluating those proposed measures.
Okay. From a statewide perspective, like with the county act commissioners, would they have the authority to like implement any of these without like DPR's prescription?
So that's one of the main things that we're looking at. So a lot of these are require a statewide regulation. So no, the answer will have to be a statewide regulation, and that is DPR's authority essentially. Now, through the different processes, it could be a voluntary basis where you work with the growers in your community and you come up to some agreement. But if it's a requirement, it has to go through the regulatory process.
Cool. Thank you.
Other questions? And then we'll go right over here.
As far as the NOI is concerned, that doesn't require a statewide regulation, does it?
No, but only the NOIs are only currently required for restricted materials.
No, so, I understand that. I understand right. That. But as far as doing something a little more aggressive, or right. As was requested, what is the? Are you waiting to get more from us before you look at that, or is there a process?
So that's why I mentioned here at the bottom is basically the NOIs. DPR doesn't receive any NOIs whatsoever. Those are directly to the County Ag Commissioner. So that would be something that the County Agriculture Commissioner office, if in the county of interest, will kind of work through. Now I did forget, and I wanted to point this out too, is that Kern County is the only county in the country that currently has a grower-to-grower notification system. So a lot of the pesticide drift incidents that occur affect agricultural workers and not usually bystanders or residential bystanders, that's what I mean. So Kern County actually has an innovative grower-to-grower system that, I believe is actually eliminating some of that drift incidences. But for anything else, it will have to be kind of agreed upon, the county.
Okay, now my question. So on that slide, the air toxic contaminants, Proposition 65, you put what are the side effects, the cancer, developmental, but how about for the rest? Do you know anything about them? Are they cancerous? What are the side effects of those air?
So DPR hasn't evaluated every single pesticide that's on this list. DPR doesn't operate the Proposition 65 list. That's done through OEHA. So essentially what we did for this presentation was just which pesticides have been previously classified by OEHA to be included in the Prop 65. And if so, where they're classified based on cancer or developmental neurotoxicology. So that is what we basically just wrote down here. But for anything else, DPR will need to do a risk assessment process. And we have done risk assessment for a few of these, but not for all of them. And all that is available on our website. But those were not, there was no identifier here in terms of whether there's any risk, any issues. Basically, what we have here is whether they were in Prop 65 or not.
Okay, and another question. For the mineral oil, I was looking over the the list. It's number one
yes.
on many of the pounds that is used. It is also a VOC for a air emission. Mm-hmm. So how is the air district working on that, or DPR?
I don't know. I mean, maybe someone from the air district can address that. But to my knowledge, there's really for DPR, Ali, let me speak for DPR itself. Mm-hmm. Currently, we are not able to monitor for mineral oil. There's no clear and analytical method that we have in place, so we're not able to see what the actual air concentrations are. We do believe that they're low, but there's really no data out there. So part of the regulatory process that I mentioned, there needs to be a clear scientific justification for any process, any step that we take. So I don't know if the air district has anything else they're looking, but I don't believe so. So it's one of those things that, you know, in the lack of data, we're not able to take any additional steps at this stage.
Okay. Another question. It's maybe for the Ag Commissioner, but for receiving any type of notification, isn't it the right to know for the community members what's around their community? You're talking about there is a farmer-to-farmer notification, but how about for the residents that live around the fields that are constantly being exposed? That right to know should be implemented with the air toxic contaminants.
So in terms of the commissioner, I'm not going to speak for him. He's actually here, so I don't know if you want to take that question.
I can't answer anything about right to know. I don't know anything about right to know. That's just an opinion. If you feel that the residents need to know those types of things, you say that they're being exposed. I think that's argumentative. Are they being exposed? Not necessarily. The air monitoring that DPR does, as well as CARB, would determine if they're being exposed at a level that's too high.
I had a question. So are you actually monitoring the homes that are directly next to the fields and ensuring that they're not being exposed to levels that are too high?
So I think that's for me. So essentially the way we monitor is we have different types of monitoring. One is an application type of monitoring. That is essentially what you're talking about. We place monitors around a treated field, and we see what is the maximum exposures that could come up from that application. We use that data to actually determine buffer zone distances and duration of that distance, basically a time period in which the air concentrations will decrease enough that it's okay to be near that application. So when we do that, that becomes a requirement for the application to take into account. You know, they have to be 100 foot, 200 feet, and that is done through monitoring and through modeling. We determine what is a safe distance or a distance in which the air concentration will be lower than whatever target we're looking at. So most applications actually have that into account. So the idea is that on the 95 percentile, we're going to be below that threshold. As long as they apply the pesticide within the parameters that are either on the label or the permit conditions that have been approved by the County Agriculture Commissioner. But we also do other types of monitoring, which is the monitoring that we do here in Shafter. It's more of a community-based monitoring. We have a monitor in one location, and that basically is what is any average resident being exposed to at any given time. Those are not as high because you're not necessarily near every single application, but it's more of an average. It's meant to assess exposures over long periods of time, a few months to a few years.
All right, we have time for one more question. If we have one more, Gustavo. First of all, Gustavo has asked a question. I just want to see if there's anyone else. Gustavo, it's yours.
Sure. I just have a question on the top, like 100, and then the top 8 that are restricted use pesticides. Out of those, how much of those have been like actually monitored? Because I know for Shafter, it's air monitoring and SERPs. So like there's an air monitoring component and SERPs. Mm-hmm. Some communities just like only air monitoring. So out of the air monitoring at the top, like 8 or these 8 here, how much have actually been like studied? This is a data-driven conversation now. So how much data do we have currently, and you know, in the past that could give us good information moving forward?
So rank three, which is 1-3-dichloropropane, that one we have an extensive monitoring network for that. Not just the monitoring network, which Shafter is part of, we actually also monitor in Delhi and Parlier specifically just for 1,3-D, because we know that those are high use areas. So that one we monitor consistently in multiple areas of the state. Potassium, so the sixth or the second here in this list and the seventh on the list, both are precursors to MITC. Basically, they dissolve, they create MITC readily as soon as it's mixed with water. So we monitor for MITC. So that one is part of the air monitor network. Currently, we have 8 sites throughout the state, as well as a number of seasonal studies and application site studies for MITC. So we have enough data on that, and we continue to acquire more data. Chlorpyrifos, we have some application site data, and we it's part of the air monitor network, but we're currently going through the cancellation process. We're still monitoring for it, and we're not dropping it from the monitoring until you know it's been canceled completely. We have chloropicrin. That's another fumigant that we monitor for constantly. Methyl bromide, we still monitor now, even though it can't really be used for field applications, only for quarantine and export purposes. But we still monitor for that, so we still have enough data on that. Mancozeb and methomyl, those are currently not included in the air monitoring network. And that has to do with the analytical process. We have monitored for these before. Actually, ARB has monitored for these before on DPR's behalf for application site monitoring studies and some seasonal studies. But in terms of being included in the air monitoring network at this stage, we're not able to because of the methodology. We will need to add a new method to that, and that increases the cost quite heavily. So those are the only two. And then paraquat. That is not included in the monitoring at this stage.
And based on like the monitoring, like the seasonal monitoring or the long duration monitoring between ARB and DPR, how much of that is like cross reference with like how much permit requests are actually used? Like, is it like one permit request per one application that you guys track, or is it like do you guys track that?
No. So essentially, currently there's a. So the way we do monitoring is just we're looking at monitoring concentrations. Then we do different data analysis once we get the data, and we actually try to evaluate it and link it to pesticide use information. Basically, what kind of concentrations are we seeing, and can we correlate that to use within a certain area? We've done that for the air monitoring network for the first 6 years, and we find that use is a poor correlation metric for air concentrations. Just because something is used at a high amount doesn't mean that the emissions are going to be at a high amount. The whole idea of our regulatory measures that we take into account is that we're reducing the emissions, but the use might be continued at the same rate. Essentially, by requiring TARPs or some other measure, they can still apply the same amount, but the emissions are going to be lower. So we have found in the past that use doesn't really correlate with emissions or concentrations. But for some of the other applications, we haven't really looked that closely into it.
All right. With that, thank you very much. If you have comments, please write them down on your comment card, or Edgar will be here after the meeting. Up next, I'm going to invite Lloyd Zola, who is working with the city of Shafter on their EJ element, which actually includes a lot of the things that we've been talking about in these meetings. Just for a quick update.
Thanks. My name is Lloyd Zola. I'm a consultant to the city of Shafter. And 3 weeks ago, we had a meeting with environmental justice groups, with health agencies, and along with faith-based organizations and churches serving the Shafter area. And what we were talking about was the concept of environmental justice. And environmental justice will overlap some of the work that this committee is doing in relation to air quality. And that discussion we had 3 weeks ago focused on improving local air quality, improving access to health care, and then also increasing the amount of parks, trails, recreation facilities within the city, basically public health based. And where we're heading is adoption of, and the reason we had that meeting, was the city is adopting what's called a general plan element, an environmental justice element to its general plan. And what the general plan is every city, every county in the state is required to have a plan that lays out issues related to land use, circulation, roadways, housing, open space, conservation of resources. And in the San Joaquin Valley, we're also required to have an element dealing specifically with air quality, and then also safety issues as well as noise issues. Now, environmental justice requirements have now been adopted by the state, and so cities and counties throughout the state will be adopting, preparing and adopting what are called the environmental justice element. And what environmental justice is, of course, it's a state law, so they have to have a specific definition in state law. The fair treatment and meaningful participation of people of all races, culture, and incomes with respect to the development, adoption, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. That's what the law says. What it means is when you adopt land use regulations, when you adopt environmental regulations, and the city does that or any county does that, be fair. And so the issues that we'll be talking about in that element, all related to environmental justice and being fair to communities that are disadvantaged, that have relatively low income compared to other communities in the state, that have high incidences of health problems, which Shafter has throughout the community. So one we'll be dealing with, and these are the basic requirements, reducing pollution exposure, and then also promoting public facilities. Now, while pollution exposure and dealing with air quality as a community, you've heard the state has responsibility for statewide regulations, the air district has responsibility for district-wide regulations, and you're now proceeding through this community emissions reduction plan. Those are based on the regulatory responsibilities of the district and the air board, state air board. The city's authority is land use. So the city has authority over land use, what uses go where in the community, where the major roadways are. And those responsibilities also extend to reviewing development projects and implementing the California Environmental Quality Act. So the city's role in the issues that you've been discussing in relation to air quality are the land use and circulation issues, where the roadways go, where industry is in relation to housing, and those types of issues. And so that is the pollution exposure. So we'll be looking at how can the city use its land use regulatory authority, use its authority over roadways to reduce pollution exposure. Public facilities, that is an issue of fairness and making sure that every neighborhood within the city has the kinds of public facilities that are necessary to carry on daily life and that there is equity between various portions of the community. We'll be looking at access to healthy food, and that is also one of the requirements to deal with and the kinds of programs that you have, not just fast food in the community, but also access to healthy foods. Advancing access to safe housing. And so while the city is already required to look at the amount of housing in the community, as part of the environmental justice element, we'll also be looking at the safety of housing, looking at older structures, for example, in relation to lead-based paints and so on. Increasing physical activity, more opportunities for parks, recreation, walking, bicycle trails, pedestrian trails, and that also relates to air quality because to the extent that you can walk to somewhere, that it's convenient to walk to somewhere, that it's convenient not to drive, that's less pollution in the community. So that is also one of the things we'll be looking at, along with promoting engagement of the public in city decision-making. And that is also one of the requirements of the element that we'll be looking at. All of this comes down to four basic themes that we have identified for the city as the consultant to the city. One is providing meaningful opportunities for community involvement. So as the city is making decisions that affect land use, that affect individual neighborhoods in the community, that affect major infrastructure, that all portions of the community have a meaningful opportunity to be part of the decision making. Looking at equity as to how the distribution of benefits, when there are parks and good things in the community, that they are distributed equitably throughout the community, and balancing who gets the benefits and who gets to pay for those benefits, so that there is a basic issue of fairness throughout the community. We'll be looking at healthy community, and that is those issues related to air pollution exposure, to physical activity, healthy foods, and so on, becomes part of what the city will be adopting a set of policies. And then one other issue, and this one is not actually required by state law, but as we looked at fairness and equity and environmental justice, we will also be looking at economic prosperity and how that is shared throughout the community. All too often you hear the issue of it's either jobs or it's a good environment. And if you want jobs, then you got to give up a good environment. And if you want a good environment, you got to give up jobs. And as we've looked at it, that economy that provides for both a healthy community and a prosperous community, that is an environmental justice issue. And so we'll be looking at how do we get both in our community, and looking at issues that some of you have brought up in terms of the city's ability to compete for jobs, to compete for businesses, looking at training for people, looking at education for the community, so that each generation can enjoy a better life than our parents had. That was what my father always told me he was there for, so I would have a better life than him. And so what we want to do is we have had that meeting with that I talked about 3 weeks ago. We will have a community workshop inviting all members of the community, all members of this committee are invited, members of the public also. That will be held right here. Right now that meeting is scheduled for September 19th at the very same time that this committee meets, 5:30 in this location. And what we'll be doing at that meeting is asking the community, how can we achieve these objectives, these goals that I've laid out? Meaningful opportunities for involvement, equity, healthy community, shared economic prosperity. And we'll like to see you all on the 19th so we can get the input. What we will also do is, based on the information we got at our meeting 3 weeks ago, based on Wayne Clausen, the city planning director, and I have been at all of your meetings of this committee. We've been taking notes of the ideas you've been talking about. We've been doing our own research, looking at the issues and strategies that you've talked about, that the district has talked about. We'll be putting together a draft element of this basic city rules that we would propose. That will be available about 2 weeks before, so right after Labor Day, about the 5th of September, so people can review it before coming to the workshop as the kinds of things that the city will be proposing. And so with that, if there's any questions.
Questions of Lloyd. All right. I encourage you all to participate in that process if you have not been. With that, I'm going to open it up to the public, and Jessica can pass the microphone around. Public questions or comments? We've got one.
I think that he made a very good point that we need to be cautious and concerned that we keep a balance between our businesses and our environment, that we don't want people to spend their money elsewhere or go to businesses elsewhere because we don't have them here anymore. So we have to be very conscious to try to get the balance right for us, for everybody. I know it's not a perfect system, but that we try to keep that balance. You know, it's not us against the farmers or us against the oil. It's all of us trying to make it a better place for us, and that we need to have if we don't have any businesses here, we won't be able to live here because there won't be any industry here. So just try to work really hard with the committee to find that balance for us, please.
And can we just get your name?
Hi, Rob Duca with Southern California Gas Company. I just wanted to comment on the Scott Wall's slide on the new state strategies to consider. There was a lot of talk about zero emission for vehicles, drayage trucks, transportation, refrigeration units and such. And I don't know if it's a question or comment, but I guess the question may be rhetorical is, how do you define zero emission? Because zero doesn't always mean zero, and I think a lot of the public doesn't realize that zero doesn't always mean zero, and that it's often a euphemism for electric, and that there are natural gas technologies that can be as efficient and as clean on a power plant equivalent emission basis as electric, if that's what that's heading toward. And I just want to throw that out there, because a lot of the public is not aware, because so much of the public discourse is about electric, that natural gas is a clean and proven technology. And yes, I have a skin in the game because of who I work for. So just take that for what it is. Thank you.
Other questions from the public? All right. I don't see any others. Our plan is to come back in 2 weeks. We know it's quite the time frame. I apologize. I had nothing to do with it. But we'll be back in 2 weeks. And our goal in 2 weeks is to take all of these strategies, these potential strategies, see which ones kind of got the most traction, see which ones line up the best with some of the inventory information we have, and see if we can work on potential targets. What could we actually feasibly do as a target goal for some of these strategies? So that's in 2 weeks on the 22nd, July 22nd. With that, I just appreciate all of you very much. I know this is a lot, and I very much appreciate the time and effort and heavy lift that this is. But I encourage you to check out our new monitoring sites to check out how air quality is here in Shafter. And we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. And we will all be around. If you don't have anything to do, you're more than welcome to help us lift things up and put them away in a very conscientious way to not mark up the floors. Thank you all.